The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to We the People. All things limited government, fiscal responsibility, and adherence to the Constitution. The We the People radio show is brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. So let me give you the details on how you can get involved this morning. If you want to join in, give us a call at 530-605-4567 or to Strat. I've only had one cup of coffee.
To
chat and stream live, go to ReadingTeaParty.com and click on the radio show link. And we have a fabulous media page. You can find out all about our guests today. You can find out about archived shows from the past, sponsors, and all kinds of things going on with the Reading Tea Party. And as you know, we meet every Monday night at 2570 South Bonneville Road. Join us anytime except tomorrow night. We won't be there then. It's the 4th of July, and hopefully you're with your family and having a great patriotic celebration of this incredible country. Good morning, Aaron.
Wow. Okay, so I come rolling in here at 8:04. Elizabeth's already got this whole thing planned.
Nice job.
Thank you.
I now have my headset on and my computer.
Sometimes it's better not to plan.
Oh, man.
So, I ad-lib well.
Well, so, this morning we've got Kirk McKenzie on here, the author of Money.
Very cool book, by the way.
I was going to ask him, is it better to be the author of money or the owner or the holder of money? But
it's a great book.
It is a great book. It's a great layout. It's super unique.
It is. I've never seen anything like it.
Both pages, the left and the right page, every time you open the book, the left and the right page...
They correspond.
It's the same page. So when you open the book, page two is on the left and page two is on the right. And then you flip it, page three is on the left and the right. Because... he has it split. On the left is mostly all the written documentation, and on the right is anything that is a graph or a chart or a picture. And each set of pages is its own encapsulated
topic.
Yeah, kind of item.
So if you're visual and you don't really want to read all through the written documentation, then the graphs and the diagrams tell the same story.
Exactly, and you can use it sort of as a research book, because you don't have to just sit there and plow. You know, you see a book, oh, it's about the monetary system. Oh, that sounds horrible and boring.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Although it's an incredibly important topic, and I think most people are not probably as aware of all that as they should be. This is a great way to get up to speed. And apparently, muting my computer was a failure this morning, along with other things I've done. We'll see if I get...
Sunday mornings can be a little tricky.
I did. Sunday mornings are a little tricky. Especially on three-day weekends, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, what? It's Sunday already? So, I think you guys are really going to like that. Kirk's going to give us a call here in a minute. And we're also planning to have him here in the Reading area. We're thinking end of July, first part of August for probably a full-day workshop.
Yeah, should be great.
And I think that will be very cool, too. So... what else?
Well, if anyone wants to join us tomorrow, and this does date the show, you know, talking about the 4th of July, sometimes we like to not date our shows so that we can pull them out of the archives from time to time and bring them back to our listeners, because our shows are so unique in terms of the content of the education and the information. They're just really valuable that way. But it is the 4th of July, and we're all meeting... tonight to watch fireworks from Anderson, and we certainly will encourage people to join us there. You can find out all the information about that, I believe, on our website. Tomorrow night we'll be at the convention center as well, and we always have information with us to disseminate to anyone that's interested about tagging into the Tea Party. And the one thing I really want to drive home is that there are so many that really believe that the Tea Party is comprised of mainstream Republicans, backed by the Republican Party. You can't believe the mix of people that we have. I would say 60% are independents. Those are people that...
And declined to state.
And declined to state, who don't go either side, left or right. But we've got such a mix of people, because when it comes right down to the nitty-gritty and the issues facing this country, it really doesn't matter what side you're on. They're very nonpartisan. We're just people pulling together and to kind of slogging through the best that we can. So I encourage everybody to come out, join us from time to time, have some conversations. I think that you're going to be amazed at the friendships that you'll make and the people that you'll recognize. You know, you'll probably show up and find your neighbors or your kid's teacher or your pastor or, you know, the guy that delivers your propane. I mean, you name it.
It's an interesting selection.
Yeah,
good one. Pull a little. You're like really all over it this morning.
I am.
I'm so glad you're back. Last week I had to be all over it by myself, and there were like four people in here. It was really crowded. It was pretty fun, but
was it warm?
Oh my gosh, was it hot in here?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one guy was like, it's pretty hot in here. I was like, I told you it was going to be hot in here.
It's a small room.
It's a small room, and it gets warm. But, you know, and the other excellent point that we always have to bring up is that we're not financed by some...
Nobody.
You know, underground entity or large entity, or it's not you know, you hear about the Tea Party all over the country, but they're all unique and they're all separate. And even within the North Coast groups that we all work with, I mean, there are, 12 of them that we all work together, and they're all financed by the people in their groups, and some of them have benefactors, actually. They've had people that started in their group, maybe moved away to another place, and periodically, you know, send them a check if they have a little extra money to pay for printing and insurance and, you know, the rent of the buildings where they meet and the radio and,
yeah,
you know,
which brings
like
me
that.
To a point. We literally are self-funded. I mean, we all reach into our pockets every Monday night and pull out $2, $5, you know, whatever we can spare that week, and we throw it into a pot. And that literally is how we fund ourselves from week to week to week. And there are so many people that donate, well, obviously their time, but also so many things down to copy paper and printer ink. I mean, we're that grassroots. We really are. And for instance, this radio show, which we found is incredibly valuable, and it's making its way across the country. We do have to pay for it every month, and so anyone out there listening that feels that this is a valuable show and wants to help us keep it on the air, I won't be too shy in saying we need your monetary donations.
Yeah, and that's Elizabeth's pet project there. Nobody in the Tea Party is paid. Nobody is financed.
We don't have members.
This, but Elizabeth does handle the sponsorships and stuff. So when you go on that radio page and you see a call, what's the number?
It's 605-7501.
And that's for sponsorships. And if you've got ideas for programming, 1460, the call letters of the station, 1460, or the call numbers, I should say, at readingteaparty.com, email me, and I'll get a hold of them for programs. So we've kind of split our duties. Elizabeth does money, and I search for programs.
Definitely check out our media page, because what you'll find there from the beginning of the show last October is a list of all of the speakers and the guests that we've had on this show, and I would say that we have definitely proven ourselves with the quality of the people that join us on this show. So,
sure. It's not designed to be like a local Reading thing. It's designed to be We the People, which is a much wider swath. So how about we take a break early and then come back, because we have Kirk McKenzie on the phone, and that way we can roll right into money when we return. You're listening to We the People here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country.
Welcome back to We the People, again brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Just a quick note, chat room seems to be down for a while. We're working on it, so you don't need to call us and tell us. We know.
We know, but we don't exactly know what's wrong with it, so
we'll figure it out.
We only half know. So let's see. We've got Kirk McKenzie on the phone with us, I think. Are you in there, Kirk?
I'm here.
Good morning.
Morning.
So you're calling us from vacation.
I am indeed.
Thank you for doing that.
Sure, you're welcome.
Let's see, can you get closer to your phone? You sound far away.
Does that sound any better?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I was watching him push the dial all the way to the top, or the slide all the way to the top, and you still sounded far away.
Sorry about that. Does that sound pretty good?
That's much better. So you're off on vacation and taking a what are you telling us?
The mic is coming out all scratchy.
It does that on this one. Sorry. Bill's giving us feedback from the other room. We have our out-of-the-room engineer, and we have our in-the-room engineer. We have a lot of supervision here.
Yeah, we do.
So, Kirk, tell the folks a little bit about yourself.
Background, I'm a high-tech guy. I used to work at Intel, Motorola, those kind of companies. I was heavy into computers and semiconductors. And a few years ago, I kind of switched gears. I think probably things that might be of most interest to your viewers, I'm a son of a career Air Force colonel, I guess is why I bleed red, white, and blue, believe in our country. And I'm enough of an engineer and technologist to dig into details. I look for truth. Engineers don't really listen pretty much to what the standards are today. They're always seeking new frontiers. And so willing to cross the thresholds of conventional thought and look for the truth. And 20 years ago, I got off the couch the first time, and I became the California State Chair for Ross Perot's United We Stand America because I was deeply concerned about the amount of debt our country had at that point in time. And since then, I just have been studying the world in excruciating detail until it began to dawn on me. I began having one epiphany after the other and came to understand, I think, pretty much what's going on. And with this emergence of the Tea Parties, I decided to try and share that information because I think it's critically important that if we're going to get a country back, we really need to understand how it truly works. Kind of like the Matrix, we got to take the red pill and understand what the truth is and get beyond what we're told it is. So that's what I've been doing. I wrote the book about 2 years ago. My wife insisted that I had it in me, and I decided to do it, and I've been trying to get the word out ever since.
Well, what a great woman to stand behind you and push you. It's like, put that together. Put it out there for the world to read. So how did you come up with the format of this book? Honestly, we've never seen anything like it.
You know, it's like engineers. We tend to do things better. We always are striving to do things better. I don't know how many books I pick up that have no illustrations whatsoever, and I find them very difficult sometimes because a little illustration here and there really can help, I think, solidify your understanding of a topic. And then those that do have illustrations, how many of us, if you know, you're reading on a page and the illustration is five other pages later and you're trying to hold your thumbs and fingers to go back and forth between what you're reading and the illustration refers to.
Oh, good point. Or worse yet, it's all in the appendix. What a nightmare. Hey, we're getting requests to see if you can get closer to the phone or something or shout at us.
The only other option I might have is I could call you back on a cell phone with a headset. It might be a little bit clearer. This is a handline. A landline I'm calling you on. It should be pretty clear.
Yeah, landline's usually awesome.
Yeah.
But you're on vacation, so you are kind of far away, so maybe that's it. Maybe when you're on vacation, you're just farther away than the rest of us. The illustration thing, just so you know, there's a lady that I know who's not a huge reader, and she really wanted to get up to speed on this topic. And when I came back from the conference where I met you a couple weeks ago, I told her, I said, I've got this great book. I've got to bring it so you can see it. And I kept forgetting to bring it, of course. But I described it to her, that it was the topic basically on the left, and whatever illustrated, whether it was a chart, a graph, or something, on the right. And I said, you know, I think you'll really like it. It's not as word-heavy as most books, especially books on this topic. And she was so excited, she went on the internet and ordered one.
Gosh, yeah. Now, what's the feedback you've gotten on the layout of this bit, this book, Kurt?
People like it.
Yeah.
You know, it's left brain, right brain, and then, you know, every little mini topic, like you say, is covered on a left-right page, so you don't have to go any further. If you want to read it in modules, you can stop and continue on the next day, whatever you want.
So it's an interesting combination of your left and right brains, because you're a writer, but you also have that engineer's perspective where you lay it out in a really easy way for people to understand. That's kind of cool, actually.
Very cool.
Yeah, I've done this throughout my entire life. You know, kind of looking back at my career, I'm the kind of guy that likes to dig into an excruciating amount of detail, and yet what I'd like to do is to synthesize that and simplify it for everybody else, and that's what I try to do in this book. It's intended to be a primer where it really explains the monetary system in a very simple gut-level way, because I think people have to understand it. It's not as complicated as they'd like to make it out to you, and we have to understand this if we're going to start electing the people that could truly make a difference.
So where would you start? I mean, when you are doing a workshop, for instance, and you, let's say you had a whole room full of people who, you know, started out, they thought the Federal Reserve was part of the federal government, let's just say. They were really just had no idea. What would you start with?
Well, pretty much I follow the layout of the book. It's laid out the way I think it's appropriate for people to get into the topic. So there are six chapters broken up into three basic areas. One is to really understand the monetary system and at a simple level what the concepts are. Then once you know that it's screwing you, if you don't mind me using that word.
No, we're not politically correct here.
No, we get that.
Okay. So the next thing you have to understand is, okay, well, you want to change the system. So you really have to understand the history. And I used to hate history as a kid, but I tell you what, right now I'm riveted by it because it's really true. Our future is going to be determined by how well we understand our history. So there's two chapters dedicated to history, and that's a seminar in and of itself. And then the final two chapters are solutions, you know, what we can do to affect this monetary system and what can individuals do to help out. And that's actually a third seminar. What I would suggest today, if you'd like, we can start talking about the basics of the monetary concepts and walk it through kind of like I do in a book, and I think it really makes it easy for people to follow.
Absolutely. You're the expert.
You know, I'm looking at the portion of your book at the back, the last chapter on what you can do, and
yeah.
I really like some of the suggestions you have. They're so simple and basic. Challenge your assumptions, reevaluate people, be a juror, not a judge, and my favorite, think for yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's really important that people, I think, to be the juror, the judge, you know, we all of us tend to listen to other people, and in 5 seconds you say, oh no, they're telling the truth because they're saying something you agree with, or no, you know, they're not because they don't agree with you. The problem we have today is that what most people believe to be the truth is not. It's just what mass media has told you. And if you really want to understand how to get our country back, you have got to open your mind up, and you're going to hear things. The truth, unfortunately, is going to be things you've never heard before, can't even believe could possibly be true. But you have to open your mind up that and not judge it immediately. Just listen to it, absorb it, try and understand what somebody's saying. Don't reject it. Just turn it around in your mind. You have plenty of time to make decisions sometime in the future. But just let it sit there and percolate for a while, because more than likely what you're being told is the truth, and the only reason it sounds so strange is that what you've been told is so far away from the truth that it's hard to conceive, this gap between them. But it's really important to just sit back and listen and absorb.
All right, so here we are. We're sitting back, listening, and absorbing. Start us wherever you'd like.
Well, let me just kind of walk through the basic concepts of the monetary system, and I think that's a useful place to start. So, and I'm just going to follow along in the way the book is, starting from ancient times and kind of working forward. Where this all begins is, you know, if you go back in time to really ancient times, you know, people are exchanging their goods and services directly through what we call barter. And the problem with barter is it doesn't scale. It's really not going to go much beyond a small little village. And even then, it's difficult. If you're raising something of high value, say a horse, how do you divide it up into small enough portions to buy eggs? I mean, barter is a very difficult proposition, and worldwide what eventually emerges is an agreement by everybody in the village to accept a third commodity in payment for their goods and services. One example of that is salt, which was used to pay the Roman soldiers, and that is where the word salary comes from. The U.S. Constitution dictates that the only currency to be used in the United States is gold and silver coin. And that is what ancient times has emerged to be that third commodity that had intrinsic value that everybody would accept in payment, and then they would use that. Along with that, then, came somebody that had to bring that commodity into the village and create a marketplace for it, and those people were goldsmiths and silversmiths that eventually adopted that to be their formal names. Now, what happens in this evolution is those who do well, who become wealthy, have more gold than they need to be able to make the daily purchases. They have to save it somehow. They have to store it. And historically, they might stick it in a clay pot buried in the dirt, or hide it in their home, or hide it in their furniture, or jewelry. The woman's jewelry and the links used to be used as coins. You would just take a link out and you'd use it as a coin. That was really one of the major ways of storing gold. But in time, people became comfortable with the idea of storing their gold with goldsmiths, who also had to have a vault or a safe or a way of protecting his gold. And they would store it with goldsmith, and he would give them an IOU or receipt saying essentially, say, you deposit 10 and a quarter ounces of gold, it would say 10 and a quarter ounces of gold payable to John Smith on demand. It was an obligation of goldsmith. What happens is that these receipts begin to circulate as money because they're more convenient. Rather than, you know, one person going into town, exchanging their receipt for gold, getting it back, making a purchase, and then the other person more than likely taking the gold and going back to town and converting it back into a piece of paper, they were countersigning these receipts over to the other person. And eventually, Goldsmith facilitates this process. Now the note would say, instead of payable to John Smith, it would actually say payable to bearer on demand. And rather than 10 and a quarter ounces, it would actually start to use standard denominations like 1, 5, 10, 20, 50, 100. So these IOUs became a form of money themselves. They were all exchangeable, redeemable for gold. And eventually, when the government guaranteed them and said, look, we have gold in the treasury, they became called gold certificates. Now, what happens in this process, those who put their excess gold on deposit with Goldsmith discovers that 90% of that gold just sits in a vault all the time. Only about 10% of that gold is actually needed to meet the daily redemptions. So he comes up with a scheme. He essentially embezzles 90% of the gold and lends it out at interest. This is where the term fractional reserve comes from. As long as he keeps enough gold in the vault not to be caught, he can lend out all the rest of that money at interest. Now, when the people pull down and want more than 10% of the money for a daily, you know, withdrawals, you then have what's called a bank run. The bank, people discover the bank really doesn't have the money in the vault. The second scheme was, well, instead of actually lending out 90% of the gold, keep all of the gold in the vault, say 1,000 ounces, and instead lend out 10 times that amount. That's still a 10% fractional reserve. But you don't have 10,000 ounces of gold, so how do you do it? And the answer is Goldsmith would print duplicate receipts. For every ounce of gold, he'd print 10 ounces of paper gold certificates. It's essentially a Ponzi scheme. Now, his wealth at this point has gone dramatically up. Let's suppose he's charging 3% storage fee on the 1,000 ounces that's on deposit and 7% on the 10,000 that he's landed out in the form of paper. He's now making 730 ounces of gold in interest per year on somebody else's money. That's 73% return on somebody else's money. And at this point, it's really fractional reserve is not the correct statement, because fractional reserve implies that you have the total money supply is good, and what you're doing is lending out some portion of that. In fact, in the second scheme, the only part of the money supply that's good is the 1,000 ounces of gold that Goldsmith is keeping. what's being lent out is bad money, paper money. So it's really not good. So fractional reserve is really not a correct term, but people still use that, and that's kind of the background behind this.
Very cool. We, Kirk, we're going to take a quick break, give you a chance to grab some coffee, and
okay.
We've got 2 minutes here to thank our advertisers. We'll be back with Kirk McKenzie, the author of Money, here at We the People Radio, on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Let them kick your neighbor off his land. This is where we gotta make a stand. The stewards of this land are mom and pop. The government couldn't run a soda shop.
I agree with that statement. The government couldn't run a soda shop. That's our own Mike Smith. He's an awesome musician, Tea Party Patriot in Corning.
PatriotMusic.com.
Yeah. So I've got his CD. It's so good. I've listened to the entire thing. There's about a dozen songs on the CD, and his lyrics are fabulous. And he kind of plays that blues, cross, country, 1970s type of rock and roll to accompany his lyrics. But definitely check him out. So welcome back to We the People.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking on the break, Kirk. We finally figured out where that expression that you're not worth your salt came from.
That's where it comes from.
So
if we didn't learn anything else today, and I know we will, that one is pretty cool.
Yeah, but that was cool because we've all heard that expression for a long time. So the first salaries were paid in salt, which is where salary came from. So if you're not worth your salt, you're not worth your pay. But I always wondered why they picked salt. So, you've closed that loop. We're really excited about that. That's like one more thing going on in the back of our heads. We can just let go now.
Good.
Cross it off my list of
things. Thank you for that.
List of things to figure out when I'm dead, huh? You're like, yeah. I'm going to ask about that. Okay, so.
Let me break for a moment on the fractional reserve then, because I'm about to start another. I'll continue this story, but is the fractional reserve part of this, have I made that pretty clear?
Yeah, yes. Actually, it was very simple, very easy to understand.
Okay. So we're now at a point where we have two kinds of money in circulation. We have gold and we have paper. And paper is 10 times the amount of gold through a fraudulent scheme. And that is the basis of our Federal Reserve System today. Eventually, those gold certificates or those bank receipts become bank notes, and Federal Reserve notes are bank notes. They are basically paper money issued not by the Treasury, but they're issued by the banks. Now, the next thing in this is this paper now is in circulation, and people are exchanging the paper. What happens? Well, people who are doing well have an excess of paper. They have more paper they need to make their daily purchases. They start depositing the paper with Goldsmith. And Goldsmith discovers that 90% of the paper just sits in the vault. And guess what? He starts using that as a reserve, and now he can lend 10 times the amount of the paper. But how do you do that? And the answer is bank credits. When you take your paper money, your Federal Reserve note, and you go to a bank and deposit it, what they do is they give you an electronic credit in a large Quicken program, ones and zeros. And all you get in exchange for that is a bank statement saying, hey, you have so many credits on deposit, and they will allow you to redeem those credits for Federal Reserve notes. So what happens now is that you take in some Federal Reserve notes, and they can now lend out 10 times that amount in bank credits. So understand the gold got multiplied 10 times to paper, and now the paper gets multiplied 10 times to electronic credits, and you get a sense of how this system really works. It's all just money out of thin air. Now, at this point in time, most people might be surprised to understand that our monetary supply consists primarily of these bank credits. Approximately 90% or more is bank credits, ones and zeros floating around what I call the matrix, which is the computerized system. And I call these credits nothing but vapors. They're vapors floating around in the matrix in a big Quicken program, and that's 90% or more of our money supply. Less than 10% of actually is Federal Reserve notes. Now, this leads us to the next topic, which is inflation. And this is really important for people to understand this, too. most people view inflation as an increase in prices. Either that is an increase in prices or an appreciation. When prices of home go up, you tend to call that appreciation, not inflation. But what really is going on is the value of the currency is going down. And because the currency is going down, it takes more of the currency to buy the same thing. So think about it. In real terms, an ounce of gold is the same as it was back in the time of Jesus Christ. An ounce of gold is an ounce of gold. A square foot of land is a square foot of land. A car is a car. These things actually have true constant value. And the reason it takes more Federal Reserve notes to buy an ounce of gold is because the Federal Reserve note has declined in value. And in fact, if you take a look at the value of a dollar in when our federal government started in 1791 till today, today's money is worth a dollar, quote, dollar is worth about 1.5 cents. That's how far that has depreciated. If you tend to look at the price of things not in Federal Reserve notes or bank credits, but you look at them in comparison using real things, other real things, what you discover is a remarkable price stability. So let me give you an example. If you were using pre-1967 silver coins, and for those who remember those are silver coins that contain 90% silver and 10% copper, a dime will still buy you a large cup of coffee at Starbucks, a loaf of bread, or a half a gallon of milk. You can still buy a gallon of gas for 13 cents. You can still buy a dinner for 25 to 50 cents. You can buy a family car for about $1,000. And you can buy a home for $10,000 to $20,000 if it's silver coin. And the reason is a silver coin has held its value, whereas the paper money that you converted into, the Federal Reserve notes, has not. So the only reason it looks like these things are getting more expensive is that the paper is declining in value. Now, I'll give you another example. If you look at the stability of prices, real things measure the real things. Now, my favorite candy bar is a Snickers candy bar. Mm-hmm. And when I was a boy, that thing was about 5 cents. And gold was $40 an ounce. So it turned out, I remember so clearly when my dad bought a Plymouth station wagon for the family because he was so upset the price of cars had gotten to be so expensive. It cost $1,000. So in Snicker bars, it took me 20,000 Snicker bars to buy that car. Today, at about $1.25 or $1.50, 20,000 Snicker bars will still buy me a family car. Real things to real things are holding. It is the currency that itself that is plummeting. So when you think about $40 an ounce for gold, going to, say, $100 an ounce for gold, it's really the currency, the Federal Reserve note, is declining in value from 1/40th of an ounce of gold to 1/100th of an ounce of gold. It's a decline in what the banks are giving us. So rather than think about inflation as an increase in prices, the better way to look at it is a devaluation of the currency. Now, what causes a currency to devaluate? And the answer is an increase in the money supply that does not result in real wealth. When banks make loans, they create money out of thin air, and by doing so, they increase the money supply. Let's take an example. You go in and get a mortgage, a home mortgage, say for $100,000, you give the bank $10,000, a 10% security deposit, you sign a promissory note. Now, the word mortgage comes from French. Mort means death, and gage means pledge. So essentially, you sign a pledge to work for the bank for 30 years. It's a form of indentured servitude. And you also sign a deed of trust, effectively giving title to your home, to the bank. So now you've given them the 10% deposit that they can use to then turn around and create your $100,000 of electronic credits. You've committed to work for them for 30 years, and you've given them the home, and all they gave you was credits in an electronic accounting system. That is how it worked. That increase in the money supply, most people tend to believe when you're borrowing $100,000, you're borrowing somebody else's deposit. That's no longer true. What happens is the money is created from the debt that you incur. This whole process is called debt monetization. And when it occurs, the beneficiaries, when you think about it, is the bank. When they take and make a loan, they now grab another indentured servant who's going to work for them for 30 years. They get title to another property, and they get $10,000 or 10% security deposit. So what happens to you if you have money in the bank? And the answer goes down in value. Well, how is that possible? You put a $100 bill in your wallet or your purse today. A year from now, it only has a purchasing value equal to 90 cents. What happened? How did some? What happened to that dime? And the answer is, when they increase the money supply, the value of your currency goes down. In the same way, let's take an example of stock in a corporation. If a corporation has a certain value and you have so many shares, then the price per share is equal to the value of the company divided by the number of shares. If you do a two-for-one stock split, you double the number of shares. The value of each share is cut in half. So if you do a two-for-one stock split and you own one share worth $100, the company turns around and gives you two shares worth $50 each. You exchanged $100 for two $50s. You're kept whole. But the share just still says one share. Well, when the banks issue debt and they issue money, they're increasing the money supply, but you don't get your additional share. So your value of your currency, your savings, everything that you hold in the form of a Federal Reserve note or a bank credit is going down in value as they increase the money supply, devaluing your currency. In effect, your wealth is being transferred to the bank, who then gains uses that to get more indentured servants and ownership of real estate. You with me on that?
We are with you on
We're
that.
We're following closely behind.
We just didn't want to interrupt.
No, okay, you're
so
doing
then
such
I'm going to go
job.
To one more concept, and then I'll come open it up here a bit. So now let's talk about debt monetization. Under today's central banking scheme, and 160 countries around the world or more now have central banks, the same concept holds true, banks are the only source of money creation. That's it. It's the banks. And the only way that banks will give you money, will put money into circulation, is if somebody borrows it. Either an individual, a corporation, or a federal, state, or local government borrows this. It's the only way that you get money put into circulation. So if you're a growing country and you're becoming more prosperous, for a country to grow, the money supply must grow. But under the current system, the only way that can be accomplished is if the debt grows. The debt, the creation, the growth, and the perpetuation of debt are built into the Federal Reserve System concept. If you follow me on that, money is debt and debt is money, and that's how our current monetary system works, because the only way you can get money is to borrow it at interest. Now, there's another implication of this. And that is, if you attempt to pay down the debt, then you implode the money supply. And with the implosion of the money supply, so goes your economy. So we're in a situation today where we have politicians that are saying they're conservative, they're going to go to Congress, they're going to work on this debt, and they're going to solve this problem and start paying this debt off, and they don't have a clue about how our monetary system works and that monetization. We're wasting our time with these candidates. They either need to be educated or they need to be ejected and bring in somebody who understands. Because the only way that we're going to get out of this system is if we reform and change this monetary system. Otherwise, it is perpetual debt. A debt that can be repaid in 30 years is a form of indentured servitude. But a perpetual debt is bondage. And I would suggest to you that with 95% of our homes in this country currently under mortgage and will perpetually be under mortgage, that we are a nation in bondage and don't quite understand that fact. We are still paying off the debts on the Civil War, World War One, World War Two, the Korean War, Vietnam War, Middle East Wars. These have never been paid off. We have not had a surplus in the federal budget for more than 7 years at this point in time. We have three generations that don't even know what a government surplus is. So this whole system guarantees that the wealth is being moved to a very small number of international banking families, and everybody else is becoming a serf. It's almost like a new form of feudalism on steroids.
Yeah,
so let me take a break at that point and pause and see if you have some questions for me.
I know we have questions, but we've got to take a quick break here. Thank our advertisers. We're going to come right back with Kirk McKenzie, the author of Money. And he's given us a quick primer on what's going on with the Federal Reserve. We'll see you back in 2 minutes here at KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Yeah, we need to get the good guys back. We need the ones that understand the truth about our monetary system. So real quick, if you want to give us a call, the telephone number is 530-605-4567. Normally, you can chat with us. We're having a little difficulty with the chat room this morning, but go ahead and go to readingteaparty.com, click on the radio show link, and at the very least, you can read all things about Kurt McKenzie and his great book, Money. A lot of information on that website, so please check that out. So we are going to jump back to Kurt McKenzie, the author of Money. And Kurt, before we get into the next segment of what you're going to talk about, why don't you give the folks all of your contact information, where they can find the book, your website, phone numbers, anything that you feel free to give out on the air so that more people can get in contact with you.
Thank you. Sure. The book is available only from my website. It's www.silentnomorepublications.com. So that's www.silentnomorepublications.com. And for people who are used to YouTube, I have put all this information out in YouTube video. It's called Why We Are in So Much Debt. There's 3 one-hour seminars that's available, and there's another one called How to Take Our Country Back. You can access those by going to my YouTube channel, which is Silent No More Pubs, for those who are familiar with that.
And also, I noticed on your website when I was checking it out this week, you actually have links to all your radio interviews.
Yeah, some of them. I actually have about 3 times that number
okay.
up now, but yes, I do.
Well, be sure and add ours.
And also the...
Yeah, we'll do that.
Well, the YouTube videos for people who are going, I don't know how to find a YouTube video if I go look specifically, those are on the radio page. So, readingteaparty.com, click on radio show, scroll down right below Kirk's picture. You've got the website, you've got the Facebook connection, you have the 3 YouTube videos, and how to email him. I mean, it's all pretty much there.
Yeah, one-stop shopping on readingteaparty.com radio page.
So, and did we give, we're still having trouble with the chat room for the people that are emailing me. It's like, sorry, we have internet connection, but for some reason our chat room has developed some sort of a shutdown mode this morning. I guess the Federal Reserve heard that Kirk was going to be on there.
Yeah, decided.
Busting him.
Yeah. So, Kurt, you asked about questions when we left at the last segment. If you were to take a wild guess, what percentage of our population understands that the Federal Reserve is not part of the federal government?
Boy, I would guess way less than 1%.
Oh, that's not good.
I was going to say 10. No, not 10.
No zeros?
I don't think so. Maybe among the Tea Party and the people who are actually, you know, getting off the couch and beginning to interact with other people, that number would be higher. But among the general population, I don't think so.
Wow. And so by thinking that it's part of the federal government, people think that
they're actually being told the whole story, and what they're watching in Congress and all these sort of manufactured, I guess, arguments, if you will, about how to lower the debt and how to control all these things, that that's actually all connected, when really it kind of isn't.
I agree. You know, it's amazing. You know, the understand the system in simple terms, really, once you boil it down and you get it, it's easy to hear it. The difficult part is to believe it. So most people kind of, you know, you haven't heard it presented this way before, and they'll have a hard time kind of following along. But really, it's easy to follow. It's just difficult for people to conceive that's how our monetary system really works.
Well, and we had a pretty good system there for a while where we had to collateralize things. You know, if you were going to buy the car for $1,000, you had to have something before you took out the loan to collateralize that. And then with the advent of the credit card, you know, back in 1951, that killed our honest money system, and there was no more collateral.
Well, I would argue that it really got killed a lot earlier than that. In fact, it started getting killed in 1863 under the National Bank Act, and this is where the bankers began to have the power and the authority to issue paper money. So it really goes back then. if you kind of follow this history of money from barter to basically some kind of a third commodity with gold and silver kind of emerging to paper and to credits, what you find is the following thing. The more convenient the money it is, the worse it is for our liberty.
You mean physically convenient?
Because we're giving up our liberty in order in exchange for convenience, because there's no question it's easier to use a credit card than a gold coin. But in the exchange of making that exchange, and with the banking system that way we have and the banking families that we have that are utilizing this and manipulating it and doing these things like creating money out of thin air, then what happened is the power and the money are all shifting away from the people towards the relatively few, who are then using that money to form the United Nations and to begin to dictate back our policies back to the people. We no longer have a representative government, and that's by design. I mean, this is one of the major tools that's being used to bring about the changes in our world.
And so I guess it begs the question. So where do you see it? Where do you see it headed if we don't derail this?
Well, my personal belief is that I participate in a lot of these groups, like Tea Party groups and Campaign for Liberty and 912 and Conservative Forum and others. And everybody, you know, understands that we're way off course, and there's an unbelievable number of issues that are facing us because this has been going on so long, you know, whether it's education, health care, cap and trade, and global warming, and money and debt and everything else. It just seems almost insurmountable. But the reality is that the power that these people have to do all this to us really stems from the fact that they control this crazy monetary system, and they're putting it in place worldwide. And as they knock over these Arab countries, they are, in fact, putting in the central banking concept in those countries as well. And it becomes really a system of bondage. I mean, it's effectively the ownership. If you could paint the United States purple for every property or car and building that's under mortgage, you'd see 95% of our country is purple. I mean, essentially, they now own our country. And they've done it through a system where they're not contributing a darn thing to it. They're just putting into place an accounting system. I mean, it's
yeah, that's about all it is. Yeah, that's truly, it's all it is numbers on paper. Years and years ago, I used to listen to a guy speak. He used to speak on this topic pretty regularly and educate people. And he said, if you could see what people really owned, he said what you'd see is a whole bunch of people driving down the road in their shorts. So you just see people in their shorts going down the road. You couldn't see their car. You couldn't see anything else because they don't own any of it. Pretty scary.
Go back to the same cast of characters. And this is the thing that over 20 years, eventually one of my epiphanies is it all leads back to New York in this country. And it all leads back to a handful of families that are called the International Banking Family, or Abraham Lincoln referred to them as the money power. It all leads back, and all these things that we think of are separate issues, education and and so forth.
Kirk, we got to take a quick break here for the news. When we come back,
we're going to start there, okay? So everybody, hang on to your seats. You're listening to Kirk McKenzie, the author of Money, here on We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM, home of Free Fire Media.
Thank you for listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. This is KCNR Shasta Redding. The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
You're joining us for our second hour. We are brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. If you want to find out more about our guests today or past shows, go to readingteaparty.com, click on the radio show link. And we're here with Kurt McKenzie. Absolutely
great guy. Has a fabulous book, very user-friendly. It's called Money, Defending Your Prosperity 2. You can go to www.silentnomore.com, find his website for all the information on how to order the book.
SilentNoMorePublications.com.
Publications.com.
Better add the publications.
So, Kurt, you've got a plan for our second hour.
I do. I'll just finish off that one point, is I think that everything, once you realize, stems back to the same folks. Then the question is, how do you stop this? And the answer is, the foundation of their power is their ability to manipulate the world's currencies and money supplies. What's happening here is happening around the world. We have got to take away their power over the central bank here in the United States and restore a monetary system that's going to empower the people again. Because if we don't do that, you know, we might win a battle here and we might win a battle there, but if they continue to have control over the money, eventually we're not going to be able to win, because they will use that ability to destroy us.
Now, Kurt, I don't know if this fits into your plan, so if I'm segueing away from that, just stop me. But nothing wakes people up more than when it hits them right between the eyes.
Yeah.
And chapter 4 of your book is how this affects you, and I've always been kind of interested in a really layman's term of how inflation transfers wealth.
Well, that's a great segue. I like that. So the
glad I could be there for you. And this is unscripted, folks.
The connection to inflation is actually not some mystical thing. It's not like, you know, something in nature just kind of wandering along. It's actually an intentional policy, and it's a policy that takes money from savers and redistributes it to new debtors, all of which puts even more people under bondage to the banking system. Then you kind of begin to understand how the whole system works. Essentially, they are taking a portion of your wealth every single year and transferring that over someplace else. And most people don't know that not only the Federal Reserve Bank's privately owned corporations, they don't understand that the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and uniquely that one, has the ability to make loans internationally. So it turns out that $16 trillion was created by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and 52% of that was lent out to foreign banks, result in Europe and Greece and every place else, to basically, I believe, foment what's going on over there at the present time. It's incredible. So the system is taking your money to empower them to do what they want to do to change the world. That's kind of the basic bottom line thing of this thing. So now, in specifics, as inflation robs you, then what happens? Well, your income goes down. So I'll give you some specific examples. The price of gold from 2000 to 2009 has soared by about 4 to 5 times. Another way to look at that is the gold, if you once begin to understand that's the constant, then what that means is the Federal Reserve notes have gone down in value to about 20 to 25 cents. Since 2000, approximately today, about 20 cents. So your income, as it appears on your W-2 form, seems like it's going up because it's measured in Federal Reserve notes. And, you know, you get your 5 or 10% per year annual raise. But the reality is that that money is buying you less and less, and the downhill slope is a lot steeper than the uphill slope of your raises. So that today, take your income in, say, 2000, and take your income today and multiply that by 20% and compare and see what's happening. Most people are sliding downhill and don't realize that. So your income is going down. Secondarily, your savings are going down. You know, if you're putting money into these monetary vehicles, they're all sliding in value, too, at the same rate, you know, from 2000 to today, 20 cents. I don't know too many people are keeping up with that. Then that means your health care, that means your retirement program, that means your kids' education. All of those things are being taken away from you. And then I guess the final example I want to give that really brings this home, let's take homes. So your income's going down, your investments are going down in real value, but, hey, you got home equity, right? Well, I have a specific real example. In 1950, a home in Northern California built for $30,000 and today has a price tag of approximately $1.5 million. So you say, oh, boy, okay, I've got $1,470,000 of appreciation. I have, you know, increased my equity. I've lost money every place else, but I'm doing okay there. Well, if you measure it in gold, that $30,000 home is now gone to $47,500. In other words, only $17,500 is actually truly appreciation. The rest is all dollar devaluation or inflation. So the government, and what does the government call that? Capital gains. So not only do they have the audacity to steal your money from you through this process, they come back and then tell you that we want you to pay a tax on inflation, on the dollar devaluation. There is no real gain there, but they're just coming back and hitting you up again, a process, partly the inflation process and the death taxes, all of that designed to make sure that the people never really become independent but remain in this state of bondage or indentured servitude. So people should understand your taxes are way overstated, you know, your incomes, you know, your gains, a gain that you might look, you say, hey, I made some money on a stock. If you measure it in gold, you may find that you've actually lost money, and yet they're demanding that you pay a tax on that. So it really is where your wealth is disappearing to and why the American dream is vanishing and why Americans are working harder and for less and less. And their kids are beginning to get the feeling that they're never going to have what their parents had. It is this monetary system that's doing it to us.
And, you know, it would almost behoove people, instead of saving their money in a traditional savings account, as they've been encouraged to do for so long, to actually take that money and invest in some type of commodity that will continue to go up, whether it's gold and silver, whether it's food, you know, some of their basic necessities of life, because as those continue to go up in price, at least if they've invested in those, their money isn't being devalued in a savings account.
And that's just kind of why I gave that example of silver coins, because if you were using silver coins, you'd be buying things for the same price that your parents or grandparents paid for those things, because the silver coins have held value, and that's why the bank has attacked them and try to get rid of both gold and silver, because they do hold value. I'm a big advocate that people should hold at least 3 months' worth of expenditures in some form of commodity that could be used as money, whether it's food or it's going to be, you know, silver. I'm a big advocate of silver over gold. Gold's too expensive. At $1,400 an ounce, you know, it's too expensive to use for day-to-day purchases, whereas today a dime at today's prices of silver is worth about $2.50. When you measure the dollar in Federal Reserve notes, it's worth about $2.50. And a silver dollar is worth approximately about $30. That's the right amount for daily purchases. So I encourage people to have about 3 months in silver, and I specifically recommend that you get these pre-1967 silver coins, you can buy them in bags because they're recognizable to most people. And then beyond that, have a savings program where you put a portion of your income. You may want to think about putting your savings, instead of in a bank or in some kind of an account like that, putting it into some commodity that's going to protect you from the constant and incessant devaluation of everything you hold in terms of bank money.
Well, that's awesome. Good advice.
Very well said.
All right. We're going to come back in 2 minutes and get the next bit of advice.
So many thanks to our advertisers here on We the People Radio. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Every night and every day now, never meaning what to say.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Welcome back to We the People, where we're not politically correct and we dispel the rumors and we don't tell you lies.
So to find out all things about Mr. Kurt McKenzie and money, defending your prosperity, go to readingteaparty.com, click on the radio show link. Great bio, all the links to his video series on YouTube, his radio interviews, all things connected with this incredible book. And I have to say one more time, I am fascinated with the blend of your left and right brain, Mr. McKenzie, because you're an engineer, but you have created this masterpiece that is also so visual.
And just not, it's not one of those books that you go, oh, it'd be something I better have, but I'm probably never going to have time to read it. I mean, it's very user-friendly.
It's the kind of book that you want to buy copies and send them to everybody that you care about, truly. Because you have so many visual aids in this book, it's very difficult to put it down. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that somebody's recognized that. I try to make this both informative and easy as I possibly can.
Yeah, people don't become engaged on things like this when it looks like a minefield. They won't. They won't ask questions. They won't. They won't wade into it, and they won't try to educate other people because they know that the minute somebody asks them a question, they're dead in the water. So this is a terrific tool, and the radio program is going to be a great tool. This will be available on CD for people to share with other folks, so that is going to help a whole lot too. So, okay, where should we go next, Mr. Engineer?
Well, let's maybe go back to the topic about some solutions. So everybody that comes to my seminars, you know, or not everybody, but I always get asked the question, and essentially it's the question, how do I protect myself, which is kind of like we were talking a little bit about there. But the reality is that, you know, nobody has, few people, let me put it that way, very, very few people have enough to save enough money in gold or silver to protect themselves for the rest of their lives. And so the best you can do is protect yourself against an emergency situation, but you, in my opinion, really have, most people are not going to be able to protect themselves against the continuing onslaught that's going on year after year, decade after decade. So ultimately, it does you no good to be on the high point of the Titanic. If all people do is try to protect themselves, everybody's going to lose. We have to work together. And I believe that there's an awakening. People do understand this in simple terms, do understand the critical importance of this issue, and begin to wake up, then I think we can begin to see a restoration. But if we don't have that, I think it's going to be very difficult. In terms of solutions to the monetary system itself, Aaron, you may not know, but I think it was yesterday I saw an email come out from Rand Paul, who's now proposing that gold and silver transactions be tax-free. In other words, any what appears to be a capital gain when it's gold or silver is in fact considered to be no gain simply because the gold and silver have truly constant value. He was one of the first people to get the first copy of my book, he and Ron Paul both. I'm not necessarily going to be taking credit for that, but let me just say I'm pleased to see him recommending that, because that's one of the solutions that's in my book, is that any gold or silver transaction, once you understand that gold and silver are a constant value, it's impossible to make a capital gain on any kind of gold and silver. If you buy gold at 1,000 an ounce and you sell it at 5,000 an ounce, it's just because the Federal Reserve note went down. There should be no capital gain tax on that. Then by extension, there should be no capital gains tax on anything when it's measured in gold or silver constant dollars. Even if you bought them in Federal Reserve notes or bank credits, it should be valued at a constant dollar, and you should be taxed on the basis of true constant dollars, not on the basis of some devaluation of the currency. This would be a huge shift in favor of the people. The other part, another part of my solution, is that you have to understand more of the history of the United States, and I don't think we're going to have enough time to go into that completely. But there is a form of money called legal tender notes that came into existence in 1862 by Abraham Lincoln to fund the Civil War. Let me step back just a bit. The way Federal Reserve notes comes into existence today is the federal government Bureau of Engraving under the Treasury Department prints them, but gives them at cost of printing, to say 5 cents for $100, gives them to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve then loans them back to the government at full value. I mean, essentially the government is printing money and borrowing it back at full face value, putting the people in debt. It's outrageous.
And I think that is the one piece that I think most people really don't know.
Yeah, they don't understand. So,
why would the government do that? So for the people that are going, what?
That's how it works.
But why? Talk to folks about why the government would do that.
Well, because the government can then go ahead and spend more money. This whole system, the reason they like it is that they can spend more money than they can extract from the people in taxes. So they do it through this monetary system that people don't understand. It's just another form. You could look at it as another form of tax. They're basically spending more than you give them, and they're doing it by borrowing money, putting you in debt for the difference. And that debt is accumulating at the rate of $1.5 trillion a year at this point in time. It's a snowball rolling downhill. It's just getting huge. And this debt is transferring not only our individual prosperity, but it's also beginning to transfer the lands. I mean, bankers always demand two things, a promise of repayment and some security, and that's true of Federal Reserve borrowing, or federal government borrowing. What is the federal government putting up as its security for all its borrowing? And many people are concluding it's the national parks. It's land in the United States is being pledged as an asset to back up all this borrowing at the Federal Reserve or at the federal level. So part of this solution then is it's coming back then is whereas a Federal Reserve note is printed by the government but issued in circulation by the banks in exchange for debt, and the federal government goes in debt to do this, why doesn't the Federal Reserve just print up money called legal tender notes and put them into circulation bypassing the Federal Reserve? They don't have to borrow this money. And this is exactly what Abraham Lincoln did in 1862, and it's what John F. Kennedy did in 1963, 5 months before he was assassinated. He passed Executive Order 11,110, authorizing the issuance of more of these debt-free types of currencies, legal tender notes. So it turns out that the government could start printing these. It can pay its bills. It can pay its Social Security. It can pay its Medicare and its Medi-Cal without going into any more debt. Furthermore, it can start paying off the debt to the federal. It can stop printing Federal Reserve notes, start printing legal tender notes, use those to start paying off the debts and the interest. I mean, start giving the paper back to the banks. It can furthermore, and there's a whole concept I have in the book called the Jubilee Decade, which is designed to do two things. One, to get the federal government out of debt within 10 years, and two, is get every legal citizen out of their home mortgages within 10 years. And that, this is all accomplishable, and it can be done without congressional act or a constitutional amendment. It can be done simply by issuing legal tender notes, and there is already precedent for those to be done by executive order of the U.S. president. It can be done tomorrow if we elect the right president. So there are some really innovative ideas in that book, and I'm pleased to see that some of them are actually, whether they came from me or elsewhere, are beginning to circulate from people like Rand Paul. It's wonderful.
And how is that? How do you think that's being received by? How about this? How do you think it's being received inside Washington, and then just out here in the land of regular people?
Well, Washington will not support it. Solutions are not going to come from there until the people begin to wake up. And how is it being received by the people? They don't know what's happening, and they don't know what it means. So there has to be an awakening of the people first, because without that, it ain't going to come from the mass media, which all comes from New York City. It isn't going to come from Washington, D.C. It's got to start with the people. There has to be awakening amongst the people, and then once they begin to get it, and then they understand the solutions, then they begin to become a lot smarter about who we vote for as politicians, not only at the federal level, but the state level, the local level, the county level, at every level, to begin to turn this system around.
You know, and one of the things that we've heard from our local elected officials, both at the local, county, and state level, is that for so long they have been a coach without a team. And when the Tea Party movement came to fruition, all of a sudden people were becoming aware, becoming educated, standing up, fighting back, joining with the officials that they had elected to take the country back in the direction that, you know, it was originally intended. So when you look at what you're doing and so many others like you, you're not an elected official. You are just like us, but you've gone above and beyond what we're doing, and you've done this incredible amount of research. You've put it in a form that people can understand. And so I would imagine that people like Rand Paul have a great appreciation for people like you, because you're taking everything. I mean, they don't have time to
do
the research.
You're building them a team.
They don't have the time to do the research and write a book and pull that together. So there has to be just a real deep appreciation for folks like yourself.
Well, thank you. I think it's true. I mean, let me give you a specific example. I had a conversation with Chuck DeVore. I mean, you remember Chuck?
Yeah, we do. Great Chuck. Great guy.
Somebody had given him a copy of my first printing of the book, which had my photograph on it, and I followed up a month later. I said, Chuck, you read my book yet? He says, well, no, but he says, I have it on my bedstand, and you're staring at me every night. Because I promised I'll get around to it, but, you know, the pressure of the campaign and so forth and so forth. And I said, well, so I started talking about it. He says, well, tell me a little bit about it. And I started telling him about some of this, and he asked me if I had some legislation on this. And I kind of looked at him, and I said, Chuck, you know, understand, I'm looking to you for leadership. And if you don't understand these issues, then how are you going to lead? And, you know, if you don't take the time to read this material, how are you going to understand the issues? And he was at least open to understanding them, but he had an interesting comment to me, and this is the one I want to pass on to you. I said, why don't you bring this stuff up? Why don't you start to bring up this education to the people? He says, Kirk, when I go to make a presentation, I've got 10, 15 minutes or so to differentiate myself from my competition. Nobody cares about money in the audience. Nobody cares about the monetary system. Eyes roll in the head, they go to sleep. And if I start to talk about that stuff, I'm wasting my time. It's got to begin with the people.
Yep.
Because even the well-intended politicians are not going to go forward on this without a groundswell of support.
Yeah, there has to be people have to call out for it and say, we want you to lead. When we come back from this break, let's go there. Let's talk about what kinds of questions can be asked, because just asking them their position on the Fed or things like that are kind of no-win questions in a lot of ways, because it's too complicated. What are some bite-sized things people can ask that will give them some insight into the candidates and where their mindset is and what they're willing to do for them. We'll be back in 2 minutes here at We the People Radio, here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
We are so glad to have you join us on We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party, as always.
To join us on the phone, 605-4567, or to join the chat room or stream live, although the chat room is a little disabled today, but to stream live, go to readingteaparty.com and click on the radio show link. So we are here today with Mr. Kurt McKenzie, author of Money, Defending Your Prosperity. If you want to find out more about Mr. McKenzie, you can go to the webpage that I referenced earlier, or go directly to his website, which is silentnomorepublications.com. So, Mr. McKenzie, continue on.
So, I think that my ambition in trying to do this is to educate people enough of this to bring, so them to start to bring this into the political process. It's got to happen. You know, it'd be wonderful if people coming into this next election cycle really begin asking questions about the monetary system, because I guarantee you the candidates are probably going to be asleep on this issue and not understand it. And if you walk in and start asking questions, they're going to have to catch up with the group. They're going to have to study this stuff for once in a while. So there's two goals. One, do they understand it? And two, where do they stand on it? So some questions that might be of interest to ask, you know, raise your hand and ask the next candidate that's running for your vote. Are the Federal Reserve's banks privately owned corporations or government agencies? Let me just ask that question. You know, if you're a room of 100 people, all of a sudden you're going to be educating, you know, the 9 people that don't understand that it is a privately owned corporation, but you're also going to find out what the candidate knows. Another good question is, how do you pay off the debt with a debt-monetized currency? Now, more than likely, they're not even going to understand what debt monetization is. So, again, that begins to expose the kinds of issues that really need to be addressed, and candidates who really are just talking in out of the sides of the mouth without understanding what they're talking about. The other thing that can be done, so there's questions like that, and I can give you tons of them if you want them on your website.
It would be really helpful to have a series of, when you get down to it, it's a fairly quick transaction back and forth with a question and an answer. And So when you ask something that requires a tremendous amount of information, whether they can answer it or not, there isn't really time to do it in that context. And you run the risk that it just turns out to be, the person asking the question feels like they ignored them, and the person being asked feels like they were going to be doomed either way. So yeah. I guess the trick is to ask things that get people the information without throwing anybody under the bus.
Well, I think that, you can do part of this in private. You know, when you're working with candidates that you like, you can do a lot of this offline and kind of test them out and see where they are. But, you know, if they're not getting it or something, I think public forum is a perfect place to start bringing this stuff out.
Sure.
You know, here's another question. Did the Federal Reserve cause the Great Depression? You know, Tom Campbell, who I have great respect for, when I was Ross Perot's California State Chair in California, he actually took me to Sacramento to present an initiative that I had written called Can't Vote, Can't Contribute. And so I liked Tom a great amount. I gave him my book. I followed up with him, in this recent election cycle and asked him about it. He's not on board. But I asked a question. I know he's a student of Milton Friedman. And I said, well, do you agree with Milton Friedman and now Ben Bernanke that the Federal Reserve caused the Great Depression? And the fact of the matter is Ben Bernanke's speech in 2002 ends his honorarium to Milton and Anna Friedman, who had analyzed the Great Depression and determined it was the Federal Reserve Bank and their policies that brought about the Great Depression. And Ben Bernanke concludes the presentation. In summary, yes, we did it. We're sorry, but we did it. Well, people should know that. Should understand that, you know, and to me this is personal, and I have parents and grandparents that went through this, and it's not just statistics and the amount of people that were unemployed. I mean, this thing stole private property and turned it over to the banks. It tore apart families. It made people destitute. Mothers were on the edge of starvation and their children. Fathers without work. I mean, the worst thing you can do to a man, frankly, is to take away his ability to provide or protect for his family. I mean, you had people that could only transport themselves by climbing on trains to get across this country. People would come by my grandparents' home and begging for food. And if you gave them food, they would put a chalk mark on the sidewalk to let other hobos know that this is a place where they can get a meal, maybe even a night's lodging. I mean, you have to understand the personal stories to really begin to understand the magnitude of this. It was caused by the Federal Reserve. And I believe intentionally so, because it was part of the taking of private property and moving it back from the people's column into the bank column. So that's another great question to ask in open forum. But, you know, a constructive way, if you have candidates, is to get them the book or get them to watch the YouTube video. And if they don't do it, hound them. And if they continue not to do it, then you start asking these questions in open forum. Because eventually you have to know, do these people understand this? And then if they understand it, where do they stand on the issue? Because this, to me, is the great divide. It's not liberal versus conservative or Democrat versus Republican. It's who understands the monetary system and is on the side of the people in this equation that has to be determined.
Now, most of these things are, and I'm going to use the word solved loosely, solved at the federal level. So people running for city council, board of supervisors, statewide elections. Where do you see their ability to impact this sort of thing?
Well, I've kind of stated this whole scenario, and I tell you where money is the most difficult, because the Federal Reserve is a federal entity, and that's the most difficult for us to have a direct impact on.
Right.
And it isn't easy. But I'll tell you right, for the first time in 100 years, we have another Andrew Jackson running for president in 2012 who's fully prepared to take on the banks. And if we miss the opportunity to elect a guy like Ron Paul, then we deserve what we get. Once you understand the money and its importance, the monetary system and its importance, and its need to be reformed and ended the way it is, and reconstituted along a way that empowers the people, then you begin, hopefully, to understand who to elect. So I think coming into 2012, here's how things shake down to me. One is everybody should get behind Ron and Rand Paul and people that are on board with them. Number two, there are now something like 35 states that are in one form or another of rebellion against the federal government, mostly the heartland states, you know, and the heartland counties like yours up in Northern California. Unfortunately, the coastal counties of California and really around the United States are lost. I mean, you're just not going to get them back, I don't think. But the heartland is where the battle can be fought and won, and we have enough states to begin to think about states taking the initiative and working in a cooperative fashion to bring about changes on money. And I know that some states are talking about gold and silver as payment of taxes. They're talking about getting rid of capital gains tax on those transactions. I mean, states are sovereign republics, and as soon as they wake up to that fact and begin acting that way, a lot can be done. So I'm a big proponent of the grassroots working with their state legislatures, particularly in the heartland, and I think it's particularly incumbent upon those grassroots organizations that are in the state capitals to really take the lead in making those connections to the legislatures and start supporting them and working on a cooperative basis, at the same time feeding that information out to all the other organizations. I think there are things that can be done on the money issue at the state level, and I do believe there are things that can be done on the constitutional level, because states can initiate a constitutional amendment without a con-con. And I think there is a few that would fundamentally change things dramatically. I think that's an approach that we ought to be taking. And then the third issue is going to be the global issue of Agenda 21 that's going to be fought at the local level. And I think people can get teeth into that at the city and county level and fight the Agenda 21 there. So that's how I see the lay of the land is. At the federal level, it's going to be the presidential elections in Congress, and you've got to make smart votes. State level, it's going to be working on constitutional amendments and monetary solutions. At the local level, it's going to be Agenda 21.
That was very succinct, actually. That,
nice breakdown.
That's nice. Because it's interesting when you know, a lot of people want to go after the federal issues. People don't actually, I want to back up on that. Most people don't really understand what federal issues are versus state issues and what state representatives can do and what federal representatives can do. A lot of people think they're my elected person, so they do everything. But it really is kind of compartmentalized, and their reach is also somewhat limited. So having some knowledge there and going after the right person for the right thing actually would be super useful education if you want to add that as part of your repertoire, I guess. I think people could use that help.
Well, I'm a big proponent. I have, I've studied the constitutional stuff, so you'll see in parts of my video and in my presentations, I talk about the 14th Amendment, the 13th, the 14th. I talk about the 16th, the 17th Amendments. I'm familiar with these amendments, how they came out to be, and the problems therewith. I'm a big advocate of Sheriff Mack, who's won a critical piece of the legislation in his Supreme Court decision on the 10th Amendment rights. You know, I'm a big supporter of Michael Benarek, who's going out there talking about constitutional. I mean, there's groups of people that we have to start working together on a collaborative basis. But I understand the full spectrum of issues. The reason I focused on money, which is the least likely to make me any money. The public out there doesn't care about money too much.
And they should. Isn't that funny? I mean, the title.
It's crazy, but people turn away from the very topic that has the most impact on them. But the reason I chose that one, it is the foundation of the power of the other side. And we have to go on the aggressive. And that you'll see that in my YouTube video called How to Take Our Country Back. It's my message to grassroots organizations across the country about what I think they need to do, because I think there needs to be a course correction in what most of them are doing in order to begin to succeed.
Fantastic. We're going to take our last quick break here. Thank our advertisers. We'll be back with Kirk McKenzie, the author of Money, here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. And on that note, we got an exciting year coming up with the 2012 election, so you ain't seen nothing yet. This is the We the People talk show from Reading Tea Party Patriots. Just a quick little plug, with the exception of tomorrow night, we meet every Monday night, 6 p.m., Bonneview Baptist Church, 2570 South Bonneview Road. And remember, we're all things fiscally responsible, limited government, and most importantly, adherence to our Constitution.
And we've got a whole bunch of other groups meeting all over Northern California, and we're affiliated with groups all over the country. So if you are looking for a Tea Party group in your area, they are all self-funded, self-run. Nobody's handed down any edicts to anybody, and they're trying to do a lot of local projects, and they could use your help. This is all these problems that we talk about on here have really one solution, and it's people.
It truly is we the people.
It's always people. So the more people get involved, the more people who bring their ideas to the table, the more people who are willing to lend their support. And that doesn't mean that it's going to eat your lunch and you can no longer, you know, coach your kids' baseball team, or, you know, you've got to give up your bowling league. Everybody pitches in a little bit and a lot gets done. So anyway, we're back with Kirk McKenzie for our final thoughts, and I asked him to do a little plug. We're going to have him come out, or down, I guess, because you're in Oregon now. So you're going to come down to Reading and do a workshop for us on a Saturday, probably, here at the end of July, first part of August. We're still working on facilities and stuff, but I asked him to do a little commercial for us. So if you were going to let people know what that'll be and get them to block that date out, what would you tell them, Kirk?
Well, it's going to be a good primer on the monetary system, but it's also going to be a strategy for how to get our country back. It's really, these presentations I've been making around the state of California have been extremely well received. They generally get standing ovations or close to it because they are presenting things, things that people haven't known before, and doing it the way you can understand it and follow it, and you really get to realize the importance of this information, and you get a handle on what you can do to help turn things around. So let me tell you, Aaron, I am looking so forward to coming in up there and meeting with your people and people from the community up there, and engaging with them and showing them and talking to them and getting their ideas, as well as exchanging the information that I have. I will definitely be talking about the monetary system in more detail.
Hey, Kirk, hold on 5 seconds. Robert is online with us. Your radio is on, Robert. Can you hang up or shut that off?
Okay.
Hello.
We may need you to tell us that again.
Yeah, Kirk, I'm sorry. Our commercial got overshadowed there. Robert, why don't you ask your question, and then we'll go back and attempt to do that again.
I wanted to ask Kurt, or actually I kind of very briefly tell my story. I became quite interested in the metals market back in the early 1900s. And 1990, I'm sorry.
And I really
began to invest in it and trade it, and began purchasing gold and silver coins, mutual funds, and stocks. And our family situation was fairly bleak in the year 2000, and we only had like about $5,000 in savings. But because of my trading and my investing and staying in that market, the mutual funds, stocks, and of course the coins, my wife and I have actually been able to accumulate about almost $500,000 just because of the increased value. So I would really encourage people, it's not too late, because these metals are going much, much higher, as reflected in the value of the dollar. So I would really encourage people to be very proactive and to begin purchasing, the very best mutual funds in the metals market, and also their gold and silver coins especially. And if you have the guts to do it, you can also open your own Scottrade account or whatever, and do your own trading. There are some great stocks out there that have done fabulous. So they're 500, 700, 800 times better than the stock market. For instance, many of the gold mutual funds, a lot of people don't know it, and a lot of financial planners won't even talk about it. But they've got 500, 600, 700% return since the bottom of the gold market in 2001.
Outstanding.
I have a little trouble with my dates here. Sorry.
it's Sunday
anyway,
morning.
I just wanted to tell my story there, quickly get it in.
Great,
and
thank you.
I look forward to coming to Kurt's presentation here.
Should be great.
Writing.
Outstanding. Well, thanks, Robert. Okay, Kurt.
Welcome.
Back to you.
Are you in there? Yellow?
I'm back.
There you go.
Great. So if you wouldn't mind going back to where you were when we first came back from break, that would be terrific.
Well, listen, we're talking about the workshop up there, and I am so looking forward to coming up there and meeting, your people and the people in your community, and as many as possible. I'm going to continue to present and educate people in simple terms on the monetary system and the importance of it and how it destroys your prosperity and what we can do to get it back. And it's going to contain, the things we've talked about today. It's going to talk about the history of the monetary system. We're going to talk about the solutions, and we're going to talk about strategies for how to get your country back. So it's going to be hopefully a very informative and a very useful presentation. Generally, when I give these presentations, the audience gives me standing ovations, and they generally comment about this being some of the best presentations they've ever had. So I think that people, I would encourage you to come. This is the real stuff. This is the real truth. And I'll tell you, the most valuable thing and the most difficult thing to obtain in your time is the truth. And this is the truth. And it's done in a way that you can understand it and you can do something about it. So I encourage everybody to attend, and I look forward to coming.
That's awesome. We are looking forward to having you. And, you know, the one thing that people should take away from this morning is that although we have a lot of things that are screwed up, you know, we're always highlighting something that we need to kind of shine a flashlight on. And as soon as we spotlight it, all of a sudden all these other things kind of come to light. But we still have to live our lives. I mean, we can't plan that next week is the end of the world and it's never going to get fixed. That really isn't what we're promoting, and that isn't the attitude that's going to fix this. We have to look long term. We need to plan long term, but we need to act every single day. And
while enjoying the quality of our lives and enjoying our families and appreciating the joy of every day. Hey, and I just wanted to let you know, Kirk, I just got an email from one of our listeners who immediately went to your website and ordered copies of your books for her children who are just out of college and have come home for the summer. What a perfect time. That's who we need to target right there is our youth.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Anybody that's a parent or grandparent, you know, it's for the kids at this point. You know, get this information out to them because their futures are not going to look too good unless this turns around.
No. That email was from Comrade Ann.
Yes, it was.
She just sent me a note. She's hilarious. She just got back from the People's Republic of Southern California, she said. She signed her email, Comrade Ann. She's hilarious. Well, that is terrific. We seriously, we talk about this a lot. I had somebody emailed me after our program last week. He was actually one of the guests on, and he said, you know, do people realize that the monetary system is in a lot of trouble? Do people realize that our economy is not just spiraling out of control with price and this and that? Do they realize there's more to it? And I said, you know, actually, they do, and you're going to really like our guest this weekend. This is something we talk about quite a bit. I think the danger is, however, that we become fatalists about it. What do you see from people out there? And what would you say to that, Kirk?
I think you're absolutely right on. And it is somewhat of difficult of a fine line. I know that as you, from my own personal experience, it's been this 20 years, you know, you live with going from what you understand the world to be to what it truly is a very difficult journey. It's a very emotional journey. Once you begin to really grasp what's going on and the depth and width of it, it is a very emotional thing to deal with. But it's the beginning. I mean, the analogy I draw for people is if you have cancer, the only way you're going to get cured is if you know you have cancer. It does you no good to not know that you have a problem or to have it misdiagnosed as a stomach ulcer. The only way that you're going to know is to get that bad news that you've got cancer, and that's when you're on the path to recovery. And so I think it's similar here in that you've got to embrace the truth, and it's going to be difficult to do, but this is putting us on the path to actually making a difference going forward in the future. And in my own work, although I continue to try to educate people on a great wide breadth of topics, it comes across as very negative because it is such a transition for people, I'm pushing more and more into the solution side of this to try and make people aware that this is far from over. There's a lot we can do provided that people begin to wake up, get up, and get active.
Because the more people that are asking the same question, the more it seems like a public public perception, I guess. And so when we talk about people that we are electing and people that are in representative office, if in fact they're going to represent the people and a lot of people are asking the same question, it's the fastest way to get them to focus.
Very good point.
I killed the show.
I like the way you said that.
It's funny how 2 seconds of silence and it's like, hello, is anyone there?
So Kirk, what are your parting words? We've got about a minute left.
Well, I'd like to actually kind of get on board. First, I'd like to thank you both for having me on the show.
No, we want to thank you.
And I really want to tell your audience to second what you've already told them. The Tea Parties and the people who are getting up off the couch, and it's Tea Parties 912, Campaign for Liberty, there's a lot of them that are doing this, are really paramount to the future of our country and restoring our constitutional government. I talk. Some people talk about a revolution. No, it's a restoration that we need to go through.
There you go.
And it's extremely important for people to get up, get active, get educated. I encourage people to go to the Red and Tea Party because it's a great group of people. They give you good information there. They have a good plan and a positive attitude. They are one of the best groups in Northern California, and believe me, I've met a lot of them. So get up, go there, get educated, hook up, and chip in to help.
And stay tuned for more details about our upcoming workshop with Mr. Kirk McKenzie.
Thanks, Kirk, for joining us. Happy 4th of July weekend, everybody. You are listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM. We will see you next week at the home of Free Fire Media right here.
Once in a love abide, I, somewhere over the rainbow.
Thank you for listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. This is KCNR Shasta Redding.